The gospel lesson is from the 6th chapter of Mark. This is a passage that is not often read in the common lectionary. And you can see that it is, as our office manager, Billy, is wonderful at creating graphics and finding things for the bulletin. It's been a real enhancement of our worship to have King David on the front. He's really getting down. Yeah. Kind of a good move there, and then on the page with the announcements, there's John the Baptist holding his head. Trust me, she said there were some things that were much more graphic than that, so she decided to go with the stone rendering. But this passage helps to explain what that graphic is all about. King Herod heard of it, it being Jesus and his preaching. And this was Herod Antipas, the son of Herod the Great. For Jesus' name had become known. Some were saying, John the Baptizer has been raised from the dead. And for this reason, these powers that are at work in him. But others said, oh, it is Elijah. And others said, it is a prophet, like one of the prophets of old. But when Herod heard of it, he said, John, whom I beheaded, has been raised. For Herod himself had sent men who arrested John the Baptist, bound him and put him in prison, on account of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because Herod had married her. For John had been telling Herod, it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. And Herodias had a grudge against John and wanted to kill him. But she could not, for Herod feared John, knowing that he was a righteous and holy man, and he protected him. When he heard him, he was greatly perplexed, and yet he liked to listen to him. But an opportunity came when Herod, on his birthday, gave a banquet for his courtiers and officers and for the leaders of Galilee. When his daughter came in and danced at the request of Herodias, she pleased Herod and his guests. And the king said to the girl, ask me for whatever you wish, and I will give it. And he solemnly swore to her, whatever you ask me, I will give it even half of my kingdom. She went out and said to her mother, what should I ask for? And her mother replied, the head of John the Baptizer. Immediately she rushed back to the king and requested, I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptist on a platter. The king was deeply grieved, yet out of regard for his oaths and for the guests, he did not want to refuse her. Immediately, the king sent a soldier of the guard with orders to bring John's head. He went and beheaded him in the prison, brought his head on a platter, and gave it to the girl. Then the girl gave it to her mother. When John's disciples heard about it, they came and took his body and laid it in a tomb. May God help us to understand and to interpret this rather difficult passage from the Gospel of Mark. For this is the Gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I'm not sure John the Baptist said thanks be to God. I know we have some Fred Buechner fans in our congregation, don't we? Do you know who Fred Buechner is? He's a wonderful Presbyterian minister, philosopher, author, and he also has a rather quirky sense of humor. And so I can see that he would have appreciated this account, which he included in his book, The Clown in the Belfry. This was a story that Fred Buechner shared. Nestled in the mountains of Vermont, there is the town of Rupert, and there's a 200-year-old church in Rupert. A man named Howard Mudgett has written a history of this church. In it, he records that in 1831, the citizens of Rupert first added a steeple and bell to their church. But something unusual happened. When the steeple was added, Mudgett writes, one agile Lyman Woodard stood on his head in the belfry with his feet toward heaven. Now, not much else is known about Lyman Woodard. He's remembered only for this minor stunt that he pulled over 160 years ago. He took a small risk and he did something that must have somewhat been embarrassing to the members of his church. After all, he concludes, New Englanders are not supposed to act like that. Now, we don't remember who the pastor of that church was or anything else about that. And how many of us have been to Rupert, Vermont? But who can forget? Have you ever been in the belfry? But who can forget Lyman, upside down, standing on his hands in the belfry of that church? That will be an image that will live forever. You know, I would guess that at this point, you're probably way ahead of me on this sermon. You know, you got David on the front, and he's dancing. And you've got all this hymn, the Lord of the Dance, and all the images about song and dance. So we're all thinking, Reverend Tom, we know what you're getting at. We Presbyterians, we need to be more spontaneous. We need to celebrate like David did. We need to kind of, in front of the Israelites. It's a big moment of triumph for David. He's vanquished Israel's enemies. He's united the people. He's accomplished all of his goals. So now it's time to call out cool in the gang. Celebrate good times. Come on. Yeah. All right. Some timbrels. Some ox slaying sacrifices. Have a big cake. We always do the big cake. And then we go home and recover. I can't believe I ate that much cake. But friends, David's main point was not the party. David's main point in all of that was to symbolically and powerfully and for many, many centuries to emphasize the presence of the Lord was in their midst. Because the Ark of the Covenant was being held at the house of Abinadab and not in Jerusalem, not in the center of the place where the temple was going to be built by David's son Solomon. In the place where it was going to symbolize that God is there among the people. That's what he was celebrating. That's why he was dancing. He was emphasizing that God is the Lord of the dance, and the dance goes on. It's a very evocative reading for the Hebrew people and for King David, this united Israel, dancing with abandon, joy, and celebration, and also, this witness to God being near, and the symbol of the Ark of the Covenant. And this also ought to challenge us, I think. It ought to challenge us to step beyond our usual routines as we look toward the future, as we're now doing, particularly during these years of transition. I'm thinking back to this wonderful passage of David dancing before the Israelites and the Ark and this great procession and you remember how many Israelite men he had involved? Remember the number? 30,000. Can you picture 30,000 Israelite men dancing and all the women were dancing with the timbrels? Wow, what a procession that would have been in front of the Ark of the Covenant. When I was installed as the pastor of the Presbyterian Church in Mendham some years ago, the charge to me, there's a charge to the congregation, there's a charge to the pastor being installed. The charge to me was delivered by one of my seminary friends, Bill Geiger, who used this passage as the keynote for his comments. And then he made his comments to a very wide-eyed congregation. Because you have to realize, David, now, Billy says the picture on the front of the bulletin is a very modest one. She found some others that weren't quite as modest. We really are trying to keep this PG today.
But
it says that basically he was basically wearing just a loincloth. Yeah. It even says later in the passage that one of his wives, Michal, who was the daughter of King Saul, the first king, who happened to have been killed, and then David became king. Well, she looked out the window and she saw him basically dancing naked in front of 30,000 Israelites, and says she despised him in her heart. So, it was a rather shocking event. So anyway, Bill's reading this passage and he's starting to interpret how this passage of David dancing basically naked in front of the Israelites relates to their new pastor, Tom. So you can imagine why they're all pretty wide-eyed. But I think it had an impact on that congregation. It really did. Now, he did not directly instruct or charge me as pastor to dance in a loincloth in front of the congregation and community, to be fair. And I don't think that anyone in the congregation thought that he meant that, although I bet a few people were worried. But I think it did get them as a church wondering. It got them wondering, what other surprises is this new pastor going to have in mind for us? Huh? And here he's got this guy preaching about that. Is he going to ask us to get out of our comfortable suburbs and get involved in some of the less manicured parts of New Jersey? Yeah. Is he going to ask us to intentionally welcome people who are other than we, or rather uniformly, appear to be? Yeah. Is he going to generate some plans and programs and goals that don't seem fully attainable and that we can, you know, put down on paper and completely realize and exactly define and balance and be proper and decorous, and we might have to risk something? Yeah. Is he going to have something meaningful to say and do about the injustices that we cannot avoid seeing in our culture unless we're really, really trying to avoid seeing them? Yeah. If they assumed all those things, they were right, because we pushed the envelope for the next 13 years. I think my friend and colleague Bill did a great service by getting the church to wonder in the back of their minds, and some of them in the front of their minds, what is this new pastor going to be up to? A little challenge. Perhaps even some tension over our calling. The possibility of change. A word of the prophetic. Chance to make a difference. Friends, the Lord of the dance really does affect us. Because there is a Lord of the dance, then there must be a dance to be danced. And since the Lord of the dance does not dance alone, then we might just have to dance along, mightn't we? Now, as I said, you may have noticed that there was another reading for this week in the Common Lectionary, another dance that went on. This one, the stepdaughter of the debauched King Herod in the times of Jesus and John the Baptist. And as we said, Herod had married his brother's wife, and John the Baptist had been preaching prophetically how wrong that was. But since Herod was so afraid of this fascinating, crazy guy prophet, John, he avoided him, and he just threw him into prison out of sight, basically to keep him safe. But then he got a little bit over-partied with his friends for his birthday, and his stepdaughter danced in a way that got a promise of anything, even to half of my kingdom. And we'll leave it at that. As we said, we're going to keep it PG. And then she demands, to his horror, and the prompting of her mother, the head of John the Baptist, brought on a platter. Yuck. Well, there are all kinds of observations we probably could make about this episode. I really wish we had it on Tuesday morning at Panera. But let's just stay with this one thought. If there is no one doing the God-inspired dance, you can be certain that there will be somebody filling the void with a non-God-inspired dance. You get that? If nobody is dancing the way God would have us dance, there are going to be people dancing the way God would not want us to be dancing. And that can get very, very ugly indeed for people and for society. While it is true that we in the church today may want to be active and yearn to be active, we don't particularly want to be proactive, to get into arenas that might involve dissonance or risk. And by the time that we decide that we have to get involved with something that needs a witness to God's ways, it often is too late. The damage has been done. So friends, as we move into September and October and we move into the program year of the church this fall, we're going to have a new vision statement and mission statement that's presented to the congregation. And this will be after the session, which has already received a draft of it from the mission study team. We'll have reviewed it and endorsed it to the congregation to consider, and we hope to adopt. And it's a wonderful vision, and it's a powerful mission statement. And I hope we don't just rubber stamp it as a bunch of nice words. But rather, I hope that we embrace it as a challenge, as the steps to the dance. It's a challenge to dance before those who don't consider God's way start dancing before us in a different way. Now, friends, not to sound paranoid, but if we look around ourselves in our country and in the world, it really is truly time for people of faith to stand up and to say, faith matters for justice. Ministry matters for community. Love matters for welcoming the stranger. Hope matters for those who suffer. And peace matters in a world that seems intent on treating human life as expendable and tries to keep pain out of view. If God is truly here, like the Ark of the Covenant being brought to Jerusalem, if God is truly here calling us to the dance, then something will happen. And so let's not be so surprised when it does. But rather, let's get ready for it to happen. A few years ago, a very effervescent author, Tony Campolo. How many of you have ever heard Tony Campolo? Isn't he a fireball? His books are amazing. In person, he will tell you, I'm Italian, get ready. He is a professor of sociology, a lecturer, Christian speaker, an incredible author. He was invited to preach at a Lutheran church in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Not Lancaster, Lancaster. If you say Lancaster, they know you're the English and not the Amish. But in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, at a Lutheran church. Now, let me tell you, it doesn't get more conventional than a Lutheran church in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. A few days before that, he had been speaker at a nearby inspirational music festival, and I think I know the one that it is. It's out in the countryside in the western part of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, every year. It's huge. And tens of thousands of young people go to it. And so some of the young people who were at the festival decided they were going to travel to Lancaster to hear Dr. Campolo to preach there again as well. And so that evening, the church was absolutely packed with the church's people and also with young people. And when the pastor began the service, he called the people to worship by saying, "Let us make a joyful noise unto the Lord. Let us come into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise." Imagine that Lutheran pastor surprised when all of a sudden a bunch of young people in the balcony jumped up and started yelling, "All right, all right!" And they started clapping. And before long, there were several hundred young people on their feet, and they were shouting praise, and they were wildly applauding. Tony writes, "I don't know what that pastor was expecting when he told the people in the church to make a joyful noise unto the Lord, but I know that the last thing he expected that Sunday night is that somebody would actually do it." So what do we expect? Because what we expect, or what we at least allow, or better yet, what we welcome, and best of all, what we become, is what will come to be with God's help, in God's presence. If we yield the dance floor to those in our times whose dance leads to hatred, whose dance leads to brokenness, whose dance leads to disturbing stereotypes in our culture, in our world, we will be just like Herod, cheering the very ones who bring about destruction. But if we respond to God with the joy, the love, and the spontaneous compassion that is Jesus' commission and example to us, the Lord of the dance, or at least we embrace and encourage those who do, then we are dancing with David. So this, friends, is our moment to choose. Who will lead the dance that we dance? This is our time to let God become for us and through us the Lord of the dance. Amen.